Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology here on Cranberry.fm. It is the 21st of July, 2016. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing. And we're going to do things a little bit differently on the show today, which incidentally I think is show number 400. We have a guest on, J.R. Oakes. But JR has, well, he's going to have to do a hard stop at about 2:45, so we're going to do the interview section of the show early, and we're going to talk about news and whatever's going on in the search world a little bit later. That cool with you, Dave?
That's great with me. This is, you know what, we're on a topic I love chatting about, so super happy to do it, whatever order gets that done.
Cool thing about this being like a milestone show, our 400th show. You know, the milestones, you look towards what you've done in the past, and also you really look towards the future. And the interview we're doing today, J.R. Oakes, who's the director of strategy at Consult Webs in Raleigh, North Carolina. Yesterday, J.R. published a piece in Search Engine Land. The piece was an experiment in trying to predict Google rankings. J.R. and a team used machine learning, they basically made their own algorithms, to try to predict what Google's view of reality is. We have, again, Director of Strategy from Consult Webs, J.R. Oakes. He's also one of the co-founders of the incredibly successful Rally SEO Meetup Group. J.R. Oakes, welcome to Webcology.
Nice to be here, guys. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, man, I mean, like, seriously, I read your article yesterday. It was, like, late afternoon. I wrote you through the contact form at Search Engine Land, and you replied, like, almost instantly, thank you for being here. It was, like, incredibly short notice.
Sure.
But I'd read the piece in Search Engine Land, and, you know, we've talked about machine learning a number of times in the past. Obviously, we've talked about RankBrain a few times. We had Eric Enge on, what was it, like, a month and a half ago, Dave?
Yep, that sounds about right.
And then you guys do this experiment in, using machine learning to try to predict where Google's going. Now, I want to talk about methodologies and the experiment and the whos and the whys and the hows, but before we jump into it all, we should probably talk about the results first, because, you know, this is radio and people need to see this in front of them. And you got mixed results. 41%
right.
Accurate, 41% disaccurate, and something remaining in the middle.
Right. You know, one of the things is, with how we did our results and, you know, a clock is right twice a day, we had to, it's important that we looked at the 40% true, 41% true positive and the 40% kind of true negative, so that you look at a balanced result. You know, and one thing I will clarify before we get too far into this is I do not consider myself a data scientist. I've talked to several data scientists and I've followed many data scientists, and this is a extremely deep and very wide, it's almost as widespread as SEO is in general with all the different fundamentals in there. And I know that there are some incredibly smart people, which is one of the reasons we had to get help from the beginning to be able to understand the more theoretical and mathematical side, as well as just someone that had a wide range of experience with different libraries. Because it is heavy math. And it is heavy programming to be able to put together a model. So I just wanted to put that clarification out there.
Well, indeed. There was a number of people involved in the experiment, including a Brazilian data scientist, Alejandro Simkovic, who you mentioned in the article.
Right.
How many people were involved in the experiment?
Internal team members, and it was me, him, and some other data scientists that we had gotten input from. So, but the, I met Alejandro online because, you know, I was about a year ago, I was looking at machine learning and I heard nothing about it in the SEO space at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I noticed that Alejandro was working on some Kaggle competitions with search relevance and more kind of large businesses and more e-commerce type search relevance, but also looking at other areas with regards to search marketing. And that was unique for him in that a lot of other data scientists are interested, or machine learning experts or data scientists are interested in, you know, large e-commerce or with machine learning in general, speech, natural language processing, image recognition, video recognition, whatever, you know, are in a lot of different areas. But there was nobody really looking at relevance at that time, which is why he was interesting to me.
Okay. So you get together with Alejandro and I guess other folks from your office. And according to the article, you use data that came from scraping, rank trackers, link tools, and a number of other tools.
Right.
To see if you could create, you know, as you call them, features that allow you to predict how a page will rank.
Right.
When you're looking at this kind of experiment, like you're sitting around the table or you're on Skype talking about it, the enormity of it. I mean, how could you possibly get enough data to run this kind of experiment?
I talked to several technical SEOs about it when we were looking at it, and that was the feedback. You're never going to get enough data. But to us, this wasn't, I didn't go into this experiment thinking that we were going to unlock the secrets of Google. It was just, you know, we're a search marketing agency. We have invested tremendously in the past couple of years, just from a data standpoint. So even if we don't, you know exactly what we're going to do with the data, we try to compile and coordinate and use data and collect it so that when we have questions, we have it there able to answer. So we're pretty good from a data collection standpoint in general, and we have, you know, engineers and developers who've been doing that internally. So, you know, we basically just went around and tried to ask ourselves, you know, what data could we find out there? You know, and luckily, you know, from a ranking perspective or a keyword and to rank perspective, you know, GetStat makes that incredibly easy. I reached out to Dixon at Majestic.
Sir Dixon, I think.
Yeah,
Sir Dixon.
He's amazing. He gave me a tremendous amount of data sets from a ranking perspective that allowed us just to basically, it was very clean, that allowed us to just bring it in, append it to the data that we had collected on the ranking or on the individual sites. And then we built crawlers to collect data from each page, sentiment, entities, topical keywords, just a lot of different data, but it was a lot of, but we had to go through and do a hell of a lot of cleaning, because during the data collection process, you know, we just learned how many different, how hard it is Google has to kind of make sense with their crawlers of just the randomness that's out there with the type of content that they crawl. But that was, it took us a good probably 2 months just to get the data in a format that we could actually do anything with it.
Now, first, I love what you said there just about, you know, I don't know what we'll do with this data, but we've got it, so we're keeping it. Like, that's awesome. When you were approaching this, the methodology, where did you sort of view as a starting spot? And what I mean by that is, did you sort of start at the back where you're looking at what are all the possible factors that we could be dealing with? What are all the various data points that we might have access to? Okay, let's work our way forward and see how close we can get to the actual results Google's providing. Or did you start with those results and do an analysis of sort of what might have been common among some of the top ranking sites? Same as, you know, traditional SEO, you know, that's kind of what I would do, right? Is start at the top and work my way back. But when you're using machine learning, it might make more sense to start at the other end. So I'm really curious where you started there.
Well, I mean, obviously, me just like every other SEO has anecdotal evidence or just experience-based evidence of what I know works. The first step, we kind of went into it very naively, I would say, because our first step was, you know, a kitchen sink approach of just what data do we have access to, with the understanding that, you know, I think there's a, it was just what data can we get in? Yeah, I even got, you know, got server location, server, longitude and latitude. It would really, let's just dump everything we can find about each of these web pages into one huge data set. And it was a huge, just an incredibly huge data set at the end. And then from there, you know, it was about, you know, can we engineer some additional features, like, you know, are the keywords in the title, the term frequency inverse document frequency, you know, was a term in the page, you know, we started to, was a term in the headings of the page, was a term in the, you know what I mean? We started to engineer some of those additional features on top of that, but it was a kitchen sink approach. And, you know, some of the machine learning libraries will kind of let you run analysis about, you know, which features they think are more important than others, especially XGBoost. It was a kitchen sink approach, and it wasn't like we said, you know, these 10 features are going to be the ones that are going to do this.
Okay, so I'm trying to imagine a kitchen sink full of ideas, and you're using some here, taking some out. I mean, it's not like you can mix and match or swap them in and out, but how long does the experiment have to run before you decide this factor may or may not be working or has too much weight on it, or this factor needs to be changed? Like, how did you make those decisions?
Well, I mean, you'll basically run a training set, and then you'll get a confusion matrix outside of that training set, or an accuracy percentage. And, you know, like I said, our first thing was we started off trying to predict a number, and we just kept doing that. And then it was just, you know, we're never going to be doing that. So we kind of reformulated and said, okay, can we do, is it in top 10 or not top 10, which we were more successful there. But it is, it is basically getting the data set, running it through different algorithms. With a lot of the algorithms that you have, XGBoost, recurrent neural networks, gradient descent, there's a ton of them out there. Not only do you have to get the right features in place, but you have to basically guess, this is my best guess that these are the features that would bear some importance on ranking, right? Or that I've heard before may. You know, obviously server location is an old one, right? But, may at some point, or may have some bearing on this, and just to get all those in there. And then from there, you basically have, you know, hundreds of parameters that you can tune in each model, and you basically run it, check the, basically the score that the model spits out, then go back, retune the parameters, check the score. And that just keeps a process of going until you kind of get the best score that you possibly can.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break in 2 minutes. But before we go, I just want to ask a quick question. 2 days ago, Eric from Stone Temple Consulting put out a study showing an experiment showing the importance of links pointing to a website, the continued importance with Google. In your experiment, were you able to find unique factors that you feel are more important or higher weighted factors from Google's point of view? I know it's a hard one to answer. I apologize for asking that way.
No, I agree with Stone Temple's study. I'll say that 100%, just in terms of the weighting that we saw. Keep in mind that we used a few models in this. With one model, which is XGBoost, you're able to basically go through and say, okay, these are the feature types, and these are the actual features that contributed to this score, right? Mm-hmm. With recurrent neural networks, it's more of a black box in that, you know, it's just a bunch of numbers and weights and a huge matrix that you really can't tell exactly what's driving that. But we did go through each feature and do kind of a correlation analysis with that feature with respect to rank, to try to help us kind of divine which features were going to be more important than others. Links and, I would say, relevancy of content to the topic beyond just a keyword level are pretty important. And the relevancy is one that I've kind of broken off, and I'm studying that individually now.
Okay, well, we're gonna have to come back to that in a few moments. I'm afraid we have to take a quick break here on WebCology. Jared, can we get you to stick around for a few minutes? I know you got a hard stop around 2:40, 2:45, but
sure.
We want to talk about machine learning in the future and all that data that you guys have. But before we do that, friends, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing. You're listening to WebCology on Cranberry.fm. It's the 21st of June, 2016, and we're going to be back after these messages.
Sit tight and don't move. WebCology will be back after this short break.
Is your website hacked? Is your website displaying error messages or loading slowly? Even if there are no signs of malicious activity, your site may still be compromised. Websites, like cars, require regular maintenance to perform at their best and not leave you stranded. At Fjorge, our website maintenance experts can help you assess which one of our maintenance plans will best support your needs. Visit fjorgedigital.com or call 612-877-3840 and get the support and protection your website and business deserve. That's fjorgedigital.com.
Are you paying too much for your paid advertising, or have you quit altogether because it seemed like a huge waste of money? Studies show that companies waste 25% of their PPC spend on average. The web marketing experts at WMETraining.com can show you how to make your AdWords account a lean, mean, converting machine. Whether you're just starting out or want to take your skills to the next level, we have a class for you. Contact the web marketing experts at WMETraining.com.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan to talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart, or you've read their SEO code of ethics, so you know they're SEO experts. But did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
A more refreshing kind of talk radio. Cranberry Radio. Cranberry.fm.
Webcology takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Webcology here on Cranberry.fm. It's the 21st of July, 2016. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing. And we have on the line with us Director of Strategy at Consult Webs in Raleigh, North Carolina, J.R. Oakes. J.R. is talking to us about a machine learning experiment that Consult Webs conducted to, you know, try to figure out if machine learning could accurately predict how Google's going to rank websites. J.R., we've been talking about a lot of heady stuff. It's, you know, it's hard to tell exactly where we left off. So let's sort of to get the audience primed back into it. Was your experiment a success?
I would say yes and no. The experiment was a success in that I think that we showed that there was some ability to do prediction with available data on Google results. But I also think that it was a very small, relatively small sample, and especially compared with just the enormity that is is available in from a keyword and content perspective on the internet. And to a certain extent, it's not scalable, because even with our data set and how we handled content, it doesn't do a good job on handling new terms, new topics, new words, and new keywords that it's never seen before.
So that's a nice machine you got there, but it ain't no rank brain. That's what you're trying to say.
I don't want to put it out there that you know we've cracked Google, because that's the opposite of what we've done. I think, like I said at the beginning, we didn't get into this to think that we were going to have the magic bullet with SEO when we could all take vacations for the rest of the year and just put it on autopilot. It was more about just learning and trying to understand how machine learning works, the different libraries, and getting ourselves involved in that process and giving us just a fun project to try to learn with.
Something really salient you said, and by the way, I don't think your experiment could have failed, because the experiment itself was, can this be done?
Right.
So no matter what the outcome, you got your answer.
Right.
You got an answer. But I think the most salient thing you said is, in your response, was you see in the future how machine learning can be used to do predictive analysis moving forward. I'm assuming that you're going to be using the data that you've collected and more data as you collect it to run further experiments.
That's right. We took this model and hosted it and then passed it around and did a kind of a wider swath of unknown terms, and it wasn't completely random at that point. It did show some promise, but it obviously is not something we could put out there as a tool that you can put your website in and it's going to give you a accurate prediction 90% of the time of whether you're going to be in the top 10 or not. It was far from that, but I think the understanding and just reading through a lot of the patents and articles that Google Research is publishing, it does give you some understanding and some insights into kind of what they're doing, where they're heading, and what they're looking at, especially in terms of rank brain and content relevance, and even, click-through rate and just how that process can work, because we've, sort of been through the process on similar data at a much, much, much smaller scale.
Something I want to make sure we cover, because it's what's really exciting, because I know we can get into machine learning, we can get into experiments like this, and some of our listeners may not understand maybe why I as an SEO would be so excited, or you as an SEO would be so excited by this, but also I think more importantly the incredible value that this understanding it actually has
right.
for the future of what we're doing. So I have a couple question. One of them, I think our listening audience will sort of glass over and go, I don't quite get why he's asking that, but I'm going to start with this one anyway. You talked about two core in the piece, two core different types of algorithms, classification and regression. So maybe explain to our listeners what those are. And I do have a follow-up question that'll make it make more sense.
Okay. Classification means that you want to put something in a specific class. You want to take a set of features, which is just attributes around something, and then from those features you want to be able to predict that it's going to be in one class or the other. So that is a very simple explanation for classification. Regression is typically used to get to a number. I mean, a number can be classification because if you have 10 classes of number, but it's more like height, maybe the value of a stock. But you're not trying to put something in one of a set number of classes, but you're trying to produce a number somewhere on the continuum of possible numbers. So that's a fundamental.
And I think when a lot of us think of Google's algorithm, we are thinking of the more regression side of things. We think of it as a race to number one. We look at all these factors, dump them all in, and we have that sort of approach to it, right? It's a race to one. There's a set number of factors, and off you go, and the one with the best result wins. But classification, I think, would come in to I suppose what you were sort of concluding or sort of getting at would come in a lot as well when we're dealing with Google trying to figure out, hey, is this a buy phrase where I should be showing shopping results? Is this local, so I should be firing in a map? Like, both of these are equally important. So what would you say, like, when you were doing the experiment, and I mean, clearly you have a very, very solid understanding of the technology here. What are the practical reasons? Why is this important for our listeners and for us as an industry to actually care and understand what machine learning is doing on Google's end? Even if the experiments may not yield, you know, 100% accurate, why is an understanding of it important to us from a practical standpoint?
I'm really glad you asked that question. I think that I read a stat, and I can't attribute it the other right now, but it was probably on Reddit, but we were talking about how we had there was this whole idea of, you know, jobs in America going overseas, right? I'm not meaning to make a political statement here, but, you know, one of the things that it was talking about was that automation has taken away more jobs than have been lost through sending jobs overseas. So I think at a very fundamental level, I think that there's so much energy from Google going into text generation, summarization, categorization, labeling images. There's a, in the article, there's a GitHub repo called Neural Talk by Andre Kaparthy that basically, and you can actually host this and send it images and it'll actually caption the image for you, right? So for years we've been doing, you know, going in and manually doing our alt tags. And I know people say not to say alt tags, but that's just how I've been said, the alt tags. I've been manually going in and writing those, but, you know, it's not probably not too far away where that's not necessary anymore. I know Facebook's already working or has machine learning models that automatically caption images for the visually impaired. So that one piece right there takes away an entire swath of work necessary by SEOs in general. I think there's obviously there's a lot of energy going into text summarization. So, you know, think about never writing a title tag or a description for your site again, but, you know, Google already, you know, changes some of the title tags as they see fit. So, you know, maybe Google gets better at doing that and having a competent summary of what's contained in the article, and they don't want to use yours. I think there's Google's done had released two big papers on text generation and summarization and topic modeling over just the past 6 months. One where they threw 32 GPUs processors at the best text generation models out there and got pretty interesting results. And text generation is basically taking a corpus of data and then generating new text that somehow summarizes or kind of is readable content that, you know, wasn't written by a human, but, you know, you might not know that. So there's some pretty interesting stuff going on Google's end. And I think, you know, ultimately I've been in the SEO business long enough to know that, you know, Google wants to keep you on their site and they want you to buy ads. So, you know, I think if you have already seen with the text snippets, that they're taking out of sites, if Google can provide the answer for the user, they're going to. So I think it's something that needs to be on SEO's radar, because there's so much research going on in so many areas that have impact for SEOs in different ways, that not at least having a fundamental understanding of what some of the pieces are, I think it might kind of catch them off guard in the upcoming years because it's going so fast there.
Well, no, what, like, you could hand TensorFlow to me in a great big server, and you know, I could either ignore my clients and spend half a year figuring out what to do with it.
Right.
You know, and many of us, you know, wouldn't necessarily know even where to begin that process, me among them, to actually toying with it ourselves. But fortunately, we've got people like you who are doing a lot of this for us, and Eric, to his credit as well, and some other people. What should we be watching? Who do you think we should be sort of following, paying attention to? What are we looking for to act if we want to actually try and keep up with what's going on and what we need to be preparing for in the future?
Well, one thing, I know that there's a lot passed around about Google patents and such, but I think, you know, one thing is keeping a watch at research.google.com and just looking at the papers. I mean, they're pretty open about the papers. Some of the papers get, I mean, very technical and very in-depth, but all of them have an abstract and a conclusion that's very readable. So you can kind of get a sense of kind of where they're putting their energy, especially from DeepMind. There's a lot of papers there that have been released recently that have a lot of bearing on kind of what we're talking about here. The other place is GitHub, and just to look at some of the libraries, you can search for RNN, which is recurrent neural network, or TensorFlow, just to see some of the projects that people are working on. Like I said, there's a hosted version of the image captioning library, which is, you know, we hosted that and passed it around our team and had people play with it. And it was funny. Some of it was funny, but it was scary as well, that how accurate it was at certain of the images. So that's something that, you know, you can have a developer put up in about 45 minutes and play around with. So GitHub's another place just to kind of keep a look on some of the projects, around machine learning that are being actively worked on. And the other place is Coursera. There's several great courses there that are pretty good at just giving people just a fundamental understanding of, and, you know, you don't have to take them for certification. You can just audit them and just go through at least the portions that you feel comfortable understanding. But those would be a good start.
Well, JR, we're down to our last few minutes with you. This must have been just an intimidating journey to jump into back in late 2015 when you guys started. What are some of the core skills that people would want to brush up on before jumping into machine learning?
Um, th- the you have to know linear algebra is one that I had to brush up on, Python is a programming language that if you kind of want to do anything of merit within the field, you should learn that. I'm very good at PHP and very good at Node, and at the start had minimal working with Python other than just a few projects. And I started with R and got fairly competent fairly fast with that, and then moved to Python to actually run some of the models.
If you're in the SEO field, you got to be a pretty smart kid. I mean, like, I think I can say this for the vast majority of our listeners, we're all pretty smart kids here. How steep was the learning curve for you?
I think it's hard if you don't come out of if you don't have some programming background. Well, I mean, number one, like, if you're a technical SEO and don't have a programming background, I think that's an uphill climb. So I think going from no programming background to jumping into this is hard. If you have a programming background, or at least you take time to do some development and workflow some projects, and I think that helps you from a technical side and also makes something like this approachable. But, I mean, to answer your question, it was a lot. And a lot of late nights and weekends and just staying at it, trying to get the models to work on a language that I wasn't exactly familiar with.
But now you're over that hump, and if you wanted to, and you're going to approach that again, it's a lot less intimidating, eh?
It's kind of like it's intimidating because, you know, it's kind of one of those things that, you know, you learn a lot, but you also learn how much you don't know. So I'm always trying to stay humble in that respect of that there's always more to learn, and it gets and it just, the more you dig, the more you realize how big the hole is.
I know we've only got a couple minutes here. I'm going to try and jam in one more question before I know we need to let you go, before we need to take a break here. But one thing, if you have to give one sort of tip to, again, and I like going back to the practical here, to a webmaster trying to, like, sort of gear for the future, figure out what they need to do with their site. Let's, notwithstanding, you may end up with a completely different structure where it's kind of building pieces themselves, like you were talking about earlier. But when you're building out your strategy right now for a site 5 years from now, what should you be looking at, knowing that machine learning is getting more and more invasive into the algorithm?
Wow, that's a hard question. I'll tell you that machine learning is going to make it easier for Google to have confidence in getting data from your site and understanding things. I don't want to say this, but I'm going to say it. It is. I mean, I think you have to get really good at content and promotion. You know, getting content seen, providing deep authoritative content, because I think Google's going to be able to know if, you know, they use click-through rate as kind of an indicator or label for whether results are accurate. The other piece of that is relevance. Is it relevant to the query? So if they can understand if it's relevant and they have the click-through rate to see if it's a result people care about, then that just leaves how good your content is and how good you are at getting it out in front of an audience. So those are the areas I would focus on.
Well, thank goodness, because, you know, for about half an hour there, I thought I was going to have to go back to, like, street kid counseling or flipping burgers or something. J.R. Oakes, man, it has been fun having you on. It's been a great conversation. We're going to have you on as you're running other experiments. You're going to get results from other experiments. Thank you so much for joining us, and please say hey to the Raleigh SEO Meetup group from us, eh?
I sure will. I appreciate the time, and I will let you know when we have, we plan to do a lot more experimenting, so we'll let you know.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Friends, that was J.R. Oakes, Director of Strategy for Consult Webs in Raleigh, North Carolina. Like I said, we've been doing the show a little bit backwards today because J.R. had to get off for a 2:45 meeting, We're going to be going to break, come back, do a quick news roundup. I hope you got your Yahoo bids in, friends, because otherwise it's too late. On behalf of Dave Davis from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, this is Jim Edgman, Digital Always Media. Listen to Webcology on cranberry.fm, and we're back after these messages.
Sit tight and don't move. Webcology will be back after this short break.
Whether you are an online business or domain name investor, you need access to the best names. With over 270 million domains already registered, finding the right names at the best price requires a great wingman. Namejet.com puts you in the pilot seat by giving you fast and unparalleled access to some of the best premium and expired domain names on earth. As the number one domain name auction platform, Namejet.com is the best place to find domains for your business or investment. So light the afterburners to the domain name aftermarket and fly over to Namejet.com at Mach speed to get great domains today. Namejet.com.
Do you look at the task of ranking your site at the top of the search engines like you would climbing the top of Mount Everest? It doesn't have to be. TopSEOs.com knows how hard that climb can be, and they can make top ranking a reality. Top SEOs sends you to only the right search vendors and agencies that they know will work for you. Since 2002, TopSEOs.com has reviewed and researched the best search engine marketing agencies and solutions providers. Don't risk the cost of falling off the proverbial peak of search rankings. Let Top SEOs give you peace of mind. TopSEOs.com, the independent authority on search vendors.
Looking for a better way to get more traffic and interaction to your Facebook page? Imagine Facebook interactivity on your page like you've never seen. Introducing your new Facebook marketing fix, Zo Social, the new and revolutionary way to easily manage and automate your Facebook contests and sweepstakes. Create a fun, easy-to-win contest by writing a simple Facebook post. Watch your post go more viral and generate loads of interaction. Track your traffic and generate email lists with ease. Zo Social is mobile-friendly and complies with Facebook terms of service. Let Zo Social give your Facebook page some flash today. Zoom over to zosocial.com.
Online anytime. This is Cranberry Radio, cranberry.fm.
Webcology takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Webcology here on Cranberry Radio. That's Cranberry FM for those who use the address bar. It is the 21st of July, 2016. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, and it's weird. We're rounding out the show now by going through a little bit of news. And Dave, you put up two stories, one from TheVerge.com, the other from Bloomberg.com, about Google using AI to, basically to build itself.
Yeah.
I guess, after talking to JR about machine learning for the last half hour, it's kind of cool. What's Google doing?
Well, there's a couple of neat stories going around right now that I was just reading this morning. One of which, it was a few years back, I can't remember the specific year, but we remember Google purchased DeepMind. Cost them $600 million. That's a heavy chunk of change. I'm sure they've used it for a bunch of things. But here's the fun one, because sometimes you go, hey, that was definitely a fantastic acquisition that you just made. They've actually started putting DeepMind and just finished an experiment, DeepMind in charge of regulating their power at one of their data centers. Now, the company uses it's 4,402,836 megawatt hours. A lot of power. That was in 2014. This is equivalent to the amount of power used by over 360,000 houses in the United States. So this is a lot of power that they're consuming. They managed to reduce a 40% putting DeepMind in charge of regulating their power, saw a 40% reduction in the amount of electricity needed for cooling. This is a 15. This is the. I mean, anybody who's ever worked at a data center will know. This is one of the biggest expenses. And if you didn't know, well, now you do. This is
just
this
running
is
the air conditioning.
Just running the air conditioning. Think about the amount of heat that, like, the computer on your desk produces. Right? Like, multiply that by these rooms. So it's an overall 15% reduction. This translates into hundreds of thousands or hundreds of millions of dollars per year of savings just in power. Well, they spent $600 million on it. So basically, in a couple of years, this thing's paid for itself, and they got the technology free. That's just a fun success story of AI, actually, because we were talking about practical. And it's like, yeah, from a practical standpoint, they've just saved hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
Indeed.
Just on their electricity bill, which is kind of neat. But one of the more interesting stories on the AI, I mean, I find that one neat because it's actually like a practical application of an important technology. But when we look at, you know, everybody's been putting out their AI, you know, Google put out TensorFlow, you know, Microsoft put its own AI software out there, Facebook, all that. Everybody's put their stuff out there. TensorFlow hasn't been touched. But here's what I found, like, as far as the number of people. Now, when we were talking to JR, he'd mentioned GitHub. And this is where developers would look for information and also indicate an interest in a specific technology. TensorFlow is at it's like five times above the next highest competitor in the AI space. So that's just, but here's what I find really, really interesting. There are over 27,000 people who are sort of following them with a clear interest in them on GitHub. Linux is at, I can't remember the exact number, it's like 33,000. Like, basically in like just a few months, they have almost caught up to Linux, who's been around since GitHub started, or since before GitHub started, and is the primary, you know, sort of server technology used to power the web. I mean, yes, IIS, but it's the most popular. Already, it has almost as much interest.
So I hear you saying two things. One, if listeners will sit back and remember for a second how quickly Linux took off and became the operating system of Uber geeks.
Mm-hmm.
For the serious Uber geek who is done messing with their desktop and wants to mess with, say, artificial intelligence, Google's TensorFlow is, by a factor of five times, the most popular of all OpenAI systems out there. And these are systems like Microsoft has its system, CNTK, and say Amazon has its DSS-TNE. I don't know what that stands for exactly, but TensorFlow is, again, by a factor of five, the most popular available AI, and in just 5 or 6 months, it's become as or more popular on GitHub than the Linux group is.
Well, indeed, and what's really, really interesting, and it's unfortunate, I can't even remember where I was reading this story, but it's actually become a concern for a lot of their competition, because everybody, and we talked about this when they first released TensorFlow, is the more developers are building stuff for it, the more data Google's collecting in a wider array of applications, because, of course, they're getting a lot of the data back. This puts them, they're already in the lead, and it puts them more in the lead. It's sort of along the, but treating data as money, it's, you know, the rich get richer, right? But in this case, it's leading in AI, and they are the richest in AI information, and they are getting richer and richer in the amount of data they're collecting based on the number of developers who are working. So it is a case of they pretty much, and I mean, there could be exceptions and there could be a new entry into the race, but they're pretty much set to win it at this point, simply because so many people are already developing on it that it's kind of almost too late to try and catch up unless something, you know, earth-shattering happens and somebody comes up with something so dramatically better. But you're competing against the minds at Google who are putting vast energy into this. So it'd be tough to do that.
Truly phenomenal. Well, we only got a couple minutes left. It's an anniversary show, and it's a historic week in tech, and I'm afraid we have to mark this. Monday was the very last day to uh, get, for corporations to get their bids in for the remnants of Yahoo. It was also probably the very last quarterly report Yahoo was going to issue. They lost money. Spoiler alert, they lost money.
You're not going to get to play that very often, Brasco.
Nope, that was one of the last times you get to punch that button because it's down to Verizon, Quicken Loans, and Vector Capital Management. One of those three is going to grab Yahoo, all those patents, all that technology, a bunch of real estate in Sunnyvale, California, and whatever else is on the auction block. And it looks like it's going for the low, low price of $4 billion. It's incredible, eh?
That is, I know. It's almost kind of sad at this point. When you reflect back, and we talked about it then a few years back when Microsoft was going to buy them. I can't remember the exact price. I think it was like 32.
45-something billion.
Yeah. Now for four.
Yeah.
And I find it funny that Microsoft's not even in the race at this point. They're just like, yeah, no.
Well, no, Mike, I mean, as we mentioned just like the last segment, Microsoft is already racing along on what we're talking about with Yahoo is like, you know, Web 1.0 and then Web even getting into Web 2.0. What we were talking about with J.R. Oaks and talking about with Google's TensorFlow is Web 4.0. You know, like this is the stuff that has, and Yahoo's still back in the 1.0, 2.0 world.
Right.
So
that's some valuable content.
And patents. And oh my goodness, you remember like that's AltaVista and Ink2Me patents? Like, those are still valuable. They're still meat in them bones.
Yeah. Very true.
Anyway, that's it. But bottom line, that's probably it for Yahoo. It's probably over. As of this week. Anyway, friends, speaking of it being probably over, this is it for Webcology this week. We're going to be back next week. On behalf of Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology on cranberry.fm. That's Cranberry Radio for those of you who use Google. We are going to be back next week. It is the 21st of July already. It's going to be a heat wave this week. Stay cool, but get outside and enjoy it. We'll talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and their guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of Cranberry News Marketing and Cranberry.fm. Rebroadcasts or retransmission of this content without proper consent is prohibited.